My fine friend. We have a fine friend with us.
Well, are we going to start by saying what this is?
I was trying to veer us on course. So.
Okay. So steer the boat.
What's the name of our podcast?
It was just okay.
And why is our podcast named It Was Just Okay?
So invariably in our relationship, we watch lots of movies. Asks me, so what did you think about it? And for me, there's about 10% of movies that are either great or good movies, and about 25% of movies that are just craptastic, and everything else is it was just okay. So I often say that it was just okay.
I think that those numbers are really skewed in your favor.
Why?
Because I don't even know that we would be doing a podcast if those were the actual numbers. The numbers are more like 10% you like a movie at all, and 90% it was just okay, or I fucking hated that movie, and here's a million reasons why, and all the things that were wrong with it, and all these other things.
Wait a second.
No?
You said exactly the same numbers I did.
Did I?
I said there's about 10% of movies that I think are good to great.
Oh my God, I just did.
And I put everything else into the, it's
did
just okay, or it's the unwatchable.
Oh my God, I'm not good at math. Okay. Damn it, I hate when I do that. Okay.
We're off to a good start.
We are off to a good start. So this is our friend who's joining us today. We've never actually had a guest. So coming to some cities near some people. I don't know if you'll be one of those people. There's a drag show with Trixie Mattel, Troop Beverly Heels. And so we have tickets to said show. So to prime the pump of that drag show, I asked these two fine people if they had ever seen the original, which you were not totally sure if you had seen it before because of your sisters.
I'm still not sure if that is one I've ever seen before. I feel like I didn't remember enough of it to have watched it before.
Okay.
So I don't think I did, but I'm not going to say for sure that I've never seen this before and just didn't have enough memorable out of it to...
You could have been
out.
Doing other things in the background.
Or it might have been one of those movies like, it's just like, I as a kid, I just didn't like it.
Okay.
Maybe I saw it too young because I had older sisters or whatever it might have been. So I might have just not found it to be a good movie and just completely forgotten about it.
Okay, fair enough. And our young fine friend, we knew for sure that you had definitely not seen this film.
No.
And possibly had never heard who Shelley Long was.
No.
True, correct.
Yes,
okay.
That is true.
All right, wait a second. You had not heard of Shelley Long before.
No. She's
not,
before my time.
Wait. Would the name Cheers mean anything to you?
Oh, I've heard of that before.
Have you ever seen an episode of Cheers?
No.
Okay,
fair enough.
So that wasn't trying to be farcical there, because Shelley Long was on Cheers.
I thought she looked like she was familiar because that's of Three's Company, but that's like kind of the same...
So Cheers is after that.
Oh.
But, I mean...
She just looked kind of familiar, but...
And that's fine. It was just... it was more
She's
me
been
trying...
She's other stuff.
But it was just more me trying to gauge things that me and might have taken for granted as being common knowledge. But
true.
For someone who's, you know, a number of years younger than us, their generation would not take that as common fucking knowledge.
For sure.
And so it was more a gauge for me because I could fully understand someone knowing what Cheers is and why it's culturally important, but not being able to pick out Ted Danson or Shelley Long from a lineup.
No, but Ted Danson has a resurgence in his career right now. Ted Danson stuck his foot in his mouth when he did blackface. And by foot in his mouth, I mean...
Sure.
I can't believe he ever got another shot at a career. And I still feel somewhat guilty that he did blackface and that I enjoy watching a show he's on now. I will say he was dating Whoopi Goldberg at the time, and he was trying to dress up like Whoopi. Now, why no one told him dressing up like Whoopi without the blackface would have been plenty enough and didn't explain, we don't do blackface, Ted Danson. Ted Danson, don't ever do that. Because he fell off of the radar for a good decade or more. But Shelley Long hasn't had a career in a long time.
Even with his career resurgence, I could see there'd be plenty of millennials who are not, you know, TV watchers or things like that that might not be aware of who he is.
For sure.
But would still be aware of the cultural effect that a show like Cheers had.
But might know who Norm is just off of people saying Norm, possibly. Sure. But they would definitely recognize the voice of Cliff Clavin.
Yes.
Why would they recognize the voice of Cliff Clavin?
He's in every Pixar movie that makes money.
Correct. So Cliff Clavin is a character from Cheers. He plays the mailman. His voice is in every single Pixar movie that's ever been made.
Oh.
Every single Pixar movie, he has some little part.
Or big
sometimes
part.
A big part.
Cool.
Yeah. So we watched Troop Beverly Hills.
We did.
So it's starring, obviously, we've gone on and on about Shelley Long at this point.
A little bit, yeah.
In this movie, she's in the midst of an ugly divorce with the ever so sexy at the time. Now, I did not think this, obviously, when I saw this, because this movie came out circa 1989. So I was in elementary school, just about to hit seventh grade. So I was probably about sixth grade at the time. Craig T. Nelson was on Coach. Craig T. Nelson of more recent shows was the dad on Parenthood. Craig T. Nelson is in a lot of stuff. So they're in this bitter divorce battle, but Craig T. Nelson is still living on the property because they have this huge palatial estate. And then they have their daughter, who's played by Jenny Lewis, who years later becomes, what's the name of her? She's a famous musician at a certain point in her career. Now I'm not going to be able to think of the name. My brother's going to be pissed that I can't think of the name of her. It'll come to me probably later when we're talking. But she was in several 80s movies and then kind of fell off the map. And then she started her own music career. She was also in a Nintendo... It's this Nintendo video game movie that Fred Savage did that she also starred in with him. The daughter of Shelley Long and Craig T. Nelson.
I know you're talking about.
So anywho, there's a lot of lead up about their relationship and the daughter feeling left out and in the middle of their divorce in the beginning. And then all of a sudden, she's telling the dad that she's going to be the new troop leader. And you kind of see a small meeting of, they call them the Wilderness Girls. And basically this meeting is about disbanding the Troop Beverly Hills because they've never made it as a troop. They've never had a leader that's stuck around. And so Shelley Long is proclaiming that she is going to be this new leader that's going to, you know, be the one to stay around and make this a go for her daughter.
She's going to be the hero they deserve, not the hero they need.
So basically the first meeting that they have, you get to meet the group of the other girls, and there's like the definitely Jewish girl. There's the girl that like her parents are supposed to be kind of like Imelda Marcos, the Filipino dictator's wife that had like that huge shoe collection from like the 80s. There's only one black girl in the group, and her dad's like a famous fighter. What else? Oh, the one little girl, her mom writes smut novels and lets her daughter help her write some of the steamy scenes. There's the movie director's daughter, who clearly has spent a lot of time in therapy. She's therapizing the other girls as well as the troop leaders. And there's a little girl whose dad, who's been out of work for a long time. He's a working, struggling actor. And then there's a little girl whose parents are clearly too busy to be around at all. Chica, who you never know if it's like her real name or a nickname. They never explain it. She, you know, is very serious looking little girl. Did I miss anybody?
No, I think that's most of them.
Yeah. Any plot points that I'm missing off the top of the basic plot?
No, so that's the setup. You know, you get to this point where she's got this troop and they're going to figure this out.
Well, you really summed that up, didn't you?
No, you did. I was just recapping your recap.
I thought you were going to add things, not no. just redo what I did.
No, okay, I didn't even redo what you did. I recapped your recap because you asked if I had any questions and I said no. And
what were those books that you could get when you were a kid, like in case you didn't want to read?
Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, you did the Cliff's Notes.
No, I did the Cliff's Notes of your Cliff's Notes.
Thank you so much.
That's what I'm saying.
So appreciated. So, yeah, I appreciate that. You didn't want to add anything of your own, apparently.
No, I think you did a detailed job.
Okay, so in the beginning, they have you sit through this really long intro, too. And it starts you out with this really cute cartoon where it's got Shelley Long with the little troops and it's got her using a bear in the front two paws, like kind of like a fake mink coat. And they're getting all these precarious situations. And you don't totally know unless, you know, just whatever the trailer showed you. And I don't remember what was on the trailer anymore, to be perfectly honest. But you just see this really dolled up pretty lady showing these girls, you know, barely anything. And then they're in these, all of a sudden they're in the woods trying to make their way. And it just looks like a mess. And it's a very cute cartoon in the beginning. But this is, you know, back when people had patience and you had to sit through those things.
You do realize why that went away, right?
No.
Okay. So right about the same time as these movies, there was a movie that came out, Star Wars. George Lucas had determined that he was going to open Star Wars with nothing before it. He wasn't even going to put the studio or the director's tag before the opening shot. You just have the scroll with the coming across, the and then the whole scrolling up of all the letters and the spaceship coming through. Nothing before it.
Not even the writing that goes up?
The writing before, and that was it. But like usually, usually you have this presented by the studio, all these required pre-things. All of these were requirements of the Directors Guild. So George Lucas said he was going to do this. And they said they were going to fine him X amount of dollars every day. And he said, fine, whatever, fine me. The reason he said this is he was 100% sure that this movie was going to be a flop. He thought he was done directing, that he was never going to pay the fine, that what was going to happen is he would just surrender his director's card and never do another movie.
Interesting.
He goes away with a friend of his. His friend for the weekend of the opening weekend of Star Wars, A New Hope, because he doesn't want to know how bad it goes. He and his friend Spielberg sit down and they write a movie over the weekend. The movie they write is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, snap.
So now, well, I'm saying, so he comes back, finds out that Star Wars has like massive opening. And so he just pays the fines. And after he pays them, enough people says, wait a second. He made so much money after paying all these fines. Why are we doing this? And so more and more directors didn't want to do it.
So
because of that, they phased all that out.
I like it.
Hmm.
But it all started because George Lucas thought that he would never have to pay the fines.
Well, he didn't. He did have to pay the fines.
He did, but I mean, because he thought he was done. He thought that he was never going to get another movie.
Ended up being worth it, though.
It changed cinema. But if he thought that that movie was going to succeed, he would have put the studio tag in front of it.
So I don't know if you guys noticed in the beginning. I don't know if she was one of the Red Feather Girl Scouts. And I don't know if you know this actress or not. But Tori Spelling was in the beginning as one of the other background Girl Scouts.
Nope.
I did not notice that.
Do you know who Tori Spelling is?
Yes. She was on that Zip Code show.
90210.
There you go.
Yes. She's also the daughter of Aaron Spelling.
And she was on that other show with the three girls until they kicked her off.
No, sweetie. That's Shannen Doherty.
Oh, okay.
That's a completely different person.
Whoops.
Who looks nothing like her. Yeah, that's Charmed.
Okay.
And that's like a brunette, brown eyes.
Close.
Tori Spelling is like, well, naturally she's a brunette because she was a brunette in this. She met her husband on the scene of a Lifetime movie, I believe. They had an affair. He was married.
Please tell me that was the Lifetime remake of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah. It was a very cheap version of.
Low budget film. Perfect.
Low budget romance. Low budget romance. There's a lot of really cool cameos in this movie. So the maid that works for Craig T. Nelson, Mr. and Mrs. Neffler, if you will. I don't know what the husband's name was. Her name's Phyllis. He's like background music. I love me some Craig T. Nelson, but he wasn't in the movie a whole lot. And he's just like a very, very side character because he doesn't have a lot to do in the film. I did like when he played an actual muffler. That was probably his best moments in the movie. The maid in the movie is also Karen Walker's maid from Will and Grace.
Yeah, I caught that.
I was like, yes. And she has some very good hair stories throughout this movie. Very similar to the same hair in Will and Grace. The woman doesn't age. She looks the same. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. For, like, how she looked in the 80s. Also, in the movie, the girl whose dad plays a director, like, midway through the movie or so, in the car, the dad is driving with his director's assistant, who also happens to be Stanford Blatch from Sex and the City.
Oh.
I know. I was like, hi. I see you. I was like, yes. Then there was a very sassy uniform clerk when they go shopping for the uniforms. And we will discuss the uniforms in great length in one moment. The mom from Family Matters was the store clerk. And she is very sassy with Shelley Long. And I was living for every sassy moment of that interaction.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. So, we took a count, and we counted 8 different outfits that were specific to the Wilderness Girl uniform, the troop leader uniform that Shelley Long, a.k.a. Phyllis Neffler, wore.
I am going to make an interjection here. And when she says, we counted them, I am going to solidly point at her and... I had 0 to do with that.
Well, I mean, there was a time where you asked if we counted a uniform directly after we pointed out and said, oh, I love this uniform. Did you take a picture of it and then wrote it down? So there was that one.
I did at one point make
sure you were paying attention somewhat.
I didn't say that I wasn't paying attention. I just said I had nothing to do with it. However, I also know that if you all got to the end and had a miscount, you were going to go back and try and figure out where you screwed it up. And I wanted no part of that.
Meaning you didn't want to have to sit through it twice?
There you go.
Or thrice, technically, because that was twice. So, do we want to discuss the said uniforms in question?
Sure.
Okay, so the first uniform that Phyllis Neffler puts on is the original... Wilderness Girls troop leader uniform, which she vehemently is opposed to. She hates it. The material is awful. The cut is not flattering to the female form, and it's hideous. The color of her hair in this
strawberry blonde.
It's perfection. Only her and Bette Midler can achieve that shade of red and make me not feel like, ugh, skeeved out. Okay, so I call that first uniform the OG uniform because obvi. Okay, so the next uniform that she puts on is the cookie sales cape. So that is after she has gone to her Tim Gunn fashion couture god who has looked at this original uniform with disgust as if it is soaked in urine and said, I can't do anything with this darling. And then he creates a goddamn miracle, a cape, a silk blouse, a beautiful kerchief, and a pencil skirt.
Specifically, he threatened to burn it.
He did threaten to burn
and
it.
And I wish he had. I would have enjoyed watching him burn it.
Well, it's clearly all different materials when she gets this new frock, exactly. However.
Which is why I'm saying they could have thrown it in a dumpster somewhere on fire and given us like a 2 second of it burning.
Correct. However, the second ensemble is the cookie sales cape. There's much more to it, but I went for succinct. And she also has a flight attendant hat. In the middle, it's open. It's beautiful. I love it. It's angel baby kisses. I love it. So then we have the girls getting ready to go on their first camping trip. And she is doing it big. She is ready for her also, I'm very sure, first camping trip. So she's got a safari chic look. And she's got her safari hat on with some flower adornments. And she's wearing a fur coat over the top, which everything with her is over the top. She's also got a brooch. But she's got high heels on to go camping or glamping. But that wasn't really a saying back then. There wasn't really such a thing until this movie, apparently. Following this outfit is when she gets pretty, I want to say, liberal with the patches. So she's just making up patches at this point. She's got, like, the jewelry appreciation patch, the grooming patch.
The CPR patch.
Shopping, all those things. And then she's wearing what I like to call the cultural appropriation patch outfit, which has her in a full Native American headdress, huge chunky turquoise jewelry, and leather fringe pants. And it is quite a sight to behold. She does have on a troop leader, like, button-up top, but that's about it from the traditional uniform. Everything else is just full-on, you know, Native American, just swipe-and-grab outfit. And then she's explaining in this particular, like, scene that they've earned a bunch of badges, they're going to have a party, it's going to be on a yacht, and that, you know, it's going to be a big shindig and a big to-do, which rolls us right into her fifth outfit, which I called Sailor Girl. She's got a traditional little sailor's hat, which is in this beautiful, like, emerald green, shiny, metallic-y material. And it's way over the top, again, with all of her little accoutrements. And she's got, like, little sailor shorts, high-waisted. It's a lot. She's also adding alcohol to the hobo stew and saying, what goes better with hobos than alcohol? Which, these are comments you can't get away with in today's movies without people getting really upset with you. But it was the 80s. So after this party is when they get really serious about competing and their patches get stripped of them. So now they're rolling right into cookie sales. And they have the concert where they sing the beautiful Wilderness Girl cookie sales anthem of Cookie Time. They've got the one little girl dressed up like Tina Turner. And they've all got on sequins. Shelley Long has on like a sequins, like beret. And her kerchief is made of sequins also.
Talking about how many boxes of cookies these girls are going to sell.
Oh, they have to sell 1,000 to get into the jamboree, which the jamboree is like the big end game. They all want to go to this jamboree and they want to win. So the Red Feathers have committed to selling 1,000 boxes of cookies, which is a shit ton. Because I was a Girl Scout. That's a lot of cookies. But Troop Beverly Hills committed to selling 2,000 boxes.
Yes, they did.
So they, not only do they sell, do they sing this song Cookie Time and sell these cookies in public. They're selling them outside of aerobics classes. They're selling them at like a senior center. They're selling them at all these different places, a grocery store, blah, blah, blah. And then they also have a fashion show.
You're talking in the middle of this, a list of 8 different outfits that she wore.
Yes.
Let's talk for a moment. The amount of money spent having a designer custom make 8 different unique outfits like that.
And these are just...
Ballpark it for me.
Oh, just the troop leader outfits?
Just hers.
Oh, God. Easily. Easily just the troop leader outfits?
Yep.
Back in 1989?
Yep.
I would say 10,000.
All right. Perfect. I like that number. If they want to sell 2,000 boxes of cookies, these things cost, what, $5 a box? That's $10,000. She could have just spent as much on their cookies as she's done on wardrobe and bought in every box herself.
But she doesn't want to. They make a point about it. Because remember, the parents are like, oh, yeah, well, we could just buy them. She's like, I want to get the community involved.
Yeah, she's serious about it. Oh, I missed that. Were you not paying attention to the whole movie?
I was.
I don't know. It sounds like our friend here makes a valid point.
She did. And I'm sure you would have made the same point, but I honestly missed that part.
Yeah, because remember, like, the parents had that meeting and she had that beautiful sweater that had the big bird on it, the black sequin bird, which we did not count as one of her outfits, even though it was clearly a Wilderness Girl meeting, but she wasn't wearing a khaki outfit at the meeting at her home, where the dad showed up with the girlfriend and the girlfriend was honking in the car. Yeah. And she got pissed.
Oh yeah, and then he didn't go back inside.
Correct. He said she's always gonna be my wife instead of always gonna be my
daughter.
I know
what happened then.
So that's when
I know what happened then.
What happened then?
So I was stopping to think, wait a second, how is this gonna play out? So now dude is in the car and she's driving away.
And she's mad.
And she's mad. And like, how does this play out? And if I'm like thinking this whole like thing through, and I think I probably just was like too sidetracked by, why the F didn't Craig T. Nelson get out of the car?
80s.
I know this is like pre-Uber and all that, but dude, it can't be that hard to get a cab.
He's thinking about getting laid.
He is not getting laid. I can guarantee you that.
He was hoping he was getting laid.
No, there is no coming back from that right now.
No, I agree with you.
You have just like...
No, I agree with you. But I think he still thought he had a chance somehow, some way.
God, I hope not.
I mean, I don't know. Men back then weren't very woke. There wasn't none of that nonsense. It was all like, I want to have what I want to have when I want to have it.
He did pay for the steak. shit. You commented during the movie about the pizza scene.
Oh, about how he had grease on his face?
Yeah.
Which he definitely did.
And he definitely always eating pizza. And I was thinking at the time, what did he do before this?
Okay.
And so I'm looking through the list. I mean, there's a lot of movies here, but he doesn't really play much in them.
Okay.
I mean, this looks like a dude who's been, like, trying to make it as an actor for freaking 20 years.
Oh, my God. Was he in pizza commercials?
No. But I'm saying, I'm going to guess that he was eating all the free pizza on the craft services cart.
Oh,
get his hands on. Because, dude, to this
struggling
point.
Struggling actor.
This dude has been a struggling actor for, like, 20 years at this point. His first credit is in 1971. And this was in 89, and he was like a police chief in Turner and Hooch. He was like a Marine.
Turner and Hooch is a great
Born
movie.
On the 4th of July. He was like...
He was the dad in Poltergeist, wasn't he?
Okay, maybe. I don't remember him being the dad.
Yeah, like that's pretty before your time. I mean, TBH. But his top credits... I mean, the thing that he's most known for is Coach.
Yes.
That's like where he really came on the scene was in Coach.
Yes.
So, I mean, he's been in a ton of shit since. So, we're on outfit number 7, which is the Cookie Time fashion show with Robin Leach as the announcer. He's announcing all of the different outfits. Pia Zadora was one of the models. I believe Dr. Ruth was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then Phyllis Neffler, she's wearing a beautiful gold lamé skirt. She has a gold tie. And the inside of her cape is also made of gold lamé. And she has the khaki outside cape. And then her hat has these gorgeous pheasant feathers just all the way out into the distance. It's everything I lived for as a small child. And at the end, they find out that they made a shit ton of money. They sold way more cookies than they had, which doesn't make any sense.
Maybe they had an order form.
Well, that's what I'm confused about, because they said they were taking 2,000 cookies, but then didn't they say they sold 4,000 cookies?
They sell 4,700 and something cookies.
So maybe they had like an extra order form.
Yeah. And like that was the weird thing to me was why they were pre-declaring it all, really, is because normally you would just take the order forms and then go and sell cookies and then come back and say, here's how many to sell us. And then like X number of weeks later, you'd get that. You could take extra at that time, but I don't know that you can get more, but who knows?
Who knows? I mean, all true things.
So those are all her outfits?
No.
Oh, wait, we have one more.
So once we talk about the Cookie Time fashion show, though, we cut to where Phyllis
Neffler... Wait. I want to go back to the fashion show.
Please take us back.
One of the people you talked about as being a guest star was Dr. Mm-hmm. Ruth.
Yes, Dr. Ruth.
Did you know?
Actually, I don't think it was Dr. Ruth. Was it Dr. Ruth or was it... What was the other one that was of that time? I don't think it was Dr. Ruth. Oh, it was the other one. We can talk about Dr. Ruth, but it was the other one. It was not Dr. Ruth. There was another famous psychologist of the same time frame. But let's talk about Dr. Ruth.
Before she became famous, what was she doing?
I don't know. Being a cool Jewish person?
She was an Israeli sniper.
Really?
Yes, she was.
Joyce Brothers. It was Joyce Brothers. Yeah, I knew it wasn't. After I said it, I was like, damn it, it was not Dr. Ruth. That would have been
But
cool.
You said it and it teed something in my head.
I did say it, and I'm glad that you teed that up, because that was kind of cool. Also, weird cameos. Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon randomly jogging at one point in the neighborhood. I found that weird. And they were referring to each other by, like, name.
No idea who those people are.
Okay, so Annette Funicello was an original Mouseketeer, like, in the 50s.
Okay.
Black and white, Mickey Mouse Club. Frankie Avalon was in the Surfer movies, like, with Gidget.
Sure.
He played Moondoggy. And then, like, in the show, they were watching Pee-wee's Playhouse at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
They were.
I found that very nostalgic. It's not really a cameo. I guess you could say Pee-wee Herman cameoed in a way in the movie. Not really. They were just showing his show.
Yeah, but they used him, like, to when they would, like, finish a statement.
Oh, yeah, he was punctuating the sentences. Yeah.
True. But I guess it's not really a cameo, but still, they, like, worked it in there.
It's a good point. The daughter that had the out-of-work actor father was played by Kelly Martin, who later grows up to play the sister on Life Goes On. She plays Becca, who, if anybody remembers Corky, he was the first... actor with Down syndrome that was ever a major character on a TV show.
Yeah, and then the sister on that goes on to ER and has the whole, like, with opposite Noah Wiley. And
don't spoiler alert. I've still never seen that show. Just kidding. It's so old.
And when Noah Wiley gets stabbed, she's there and gets stabbed as well. And they're like both bleeding out on the floor together.
Now you're major spoiler alerting it? Wow, that's rude.
It's like a 25-year-old show.
So what if I decided I just wanted to watch it? You know I love Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, I haven't seen that in a while.
Grey's Anatomy?
ER was like the granddaddy of all of that.
Yep, George Clooney.
Oh, snaps.
Anthony Edwards.
George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Very first TV show, Facts of Life. Just letting you know, in case you didn't know. So I also found it, we talked about the maid a little bit earlier. When they took the badges away from the little girls, the maid saying, "Badges, we don't need no stinking badges." I was a little bit like, you guys are doing too much with this maid. Because also in the Cookie Time video, she's got maracas.
And like
she's
a traditional, like dress.
Yeah, she looks like the chick on the refried beans can. What brand is that that has like the señorita on it?
Rosa or something.
Rosa or something?
I think it is, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just way too like La Cucaracha for me personally, and my Mexican heart was like, no, please stop. But 1989, so they couldn't stop. And then when the girls were selling cookies door to door, also they showed up at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's door. But unfortunately, the little red feathers had already sold the cookies to that very tall, beautiful man. He was so polite. I liked that when Robin Leach was done with the fashion show, he said, "Khaki wishes and cookie dreams." That I liked. Because if you're old enough like us, you might remember it was caviar wishes and champagne dreams. And that the Cookie Time song was also playing on the orchestra.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good stuff. So for her eighth outfit, Phyllis Neffler is, and it's at the Jamboree, because remember they sold way more than their 1,000. They sold 4,000 and blah, 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 blah. She has on her Jamboree Jungle Justice outfit, which is like these safari pants that have like the really big thigh area, which she definitely does not need. She's a petite woman and like they balloon out at the thighs like a hunter. And then she has a forest ranger hat, and then like a big kind of overdone kind of like a shoulder as well on her Wilderness Girl troop leader outfit. It's touch and go. Her nemesis goes down for the count with her own daughter's troop, leaving her in the lurches. And it's up to Troop Beverly Hills, who also want to leave her behind. But Phyllis Neffler decides, no. That's not the spirit of the Wilderness Girls. And they take her all the way to the finish line, therefore winning the day.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm not sure if I had been that woman's daughter, I wouldn't have left her ass in the hole, too.
Right? She was a miserable person.
That, let's be fair here, getting left in the hole was her own goddamn fault.
Yeah, she's kind of an awful human being.
What was her name again? Velda.
Velda.
Well.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, I don't remember what her name is.
Velda.
Velda.
That's what it was.
I do have to say I did really like when the Wilderness Girls go camping and they get rained out and the fondue pot of chocolate gets tipped over.
Oh my gosh, that's my favorite.
And they decide to go to, what hotel do they end up at?
I think it's just called Beverly Hills Hotel.
Beverly Hills Hotel. And Shelley Long decides to tell her ghost story, her scary story.
That was prime.
And she's like, you know,
Gustavo was not there.
My regular hairstylist, Christoph, was not there. He was not available. And in his place was Ronaldo. His eyes were steel gray. And he promised, I will do a touch-up. I can do highlights and a body wave. And he turned my chair around. And he gave me a perm! And all the girls' faces are just like in horror. They all Even scream. The little black girl's face is just like, Which back then, I mean, not a lot of people knew that a perm for a girl of color is not the same for a white woman. It's totally opposite. So I would not, I had no clue. And the little girl was like on par. She was like, It was everything. Just their faces, the shock and the horror of a perm, which were very popular back in 1989. They were kind of phasing out, but they were still happening. You two planning on talking?
I don't know that I have much to say. I mean, like...
I've only chimed in where I'm like, yeah.
So what did you think of the movie?
It was cute overall. Very funny. I mean, it was obviously ridiculous and over the top, but funny and enjoyable. I would say it was probably just okay, but it's probably on the high end of just okay instead of the low end of just okay.
On the cute end.
Yeah, I would say it was on the almost a good end of it was just okay.
Nice. I think that's a very high mark from you. All right. What did you think of the movie?
I loved it. I thought it was really cute. And it had some really good, like, funny moments, but there was also some, you know, like, the girl who was struggling with finances, and but then, you know, the little girl chimes in of, you know, it's especially good to have friends with money, and I only charge you 10% interest a week. So it's just, there's a lot of like, oh, and then ha ha ha. So it was a cute, cute, fun movie.
Yeah, I really like this movie because it has a lot of making fun of itself, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's a good way of showing disparity and inequality, but in a way that you can kind of laugh and you could have a good conversation with your kids after watching this and talk about, you know, like not everybody has money and not everybody has the ability to, not everybody's an outdoorsy person and not everybody has the same qualities and characteristics. You know, I think it's a really cute movie and I think Shelley Long is freaking hysterical in it. And it's also a good movie where there's a lot of family dynamics in it. You know, the daughter is parenting the parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Craig T. Nelson is clearly, he's fallen out of love with his wife because, you know, she's become this socialite snob who doesn't care about anything.
But and then shopping.
Except for shopping. And then all of a sudden she becomes like more than a one-dimensional person. And then he starts falling back in love with her. And so, I mean, there's a lot of sweet moments in this movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that this movie was available on Amazon Prime. We purchased this movie. I will watch it again and again.